Hello, everybody, and welcome to the GMS Magazine channel. I am Paco Garcia, your host, and this is the RPG Interview Room, the show in which I am lucky enough to get together with some of the best people in the world of role-playing games and ask them a ton of questions. Today, I have with me Stephen Hart. Stephen currently has a crowdfunding campaign running on Game on Tabletop, which you better take a look at quickly because it's going to run out in the next 5 days before the end of 2020. And he's trying to gather some funds and awareness of a project he's been working on for a few months now called the Oracle Magazine. It is a monthly RPG magazine that he's creating pretty much by himself and promises an awful lot, full of locations and NPCs. It really, really is lovely. Absolutely lovely. For £6, the printed issue, this is a steal. Seriously, this is the kind of thing that you would just go for just to help a creator realize their dreams, because it's such a beautiful thing to behold. It really is. If to that we add that Stephen is a nice guy to boot, this is kind of a no-brainer for me. So, without further ado, I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did doing it, and I will talk to you at the end of the episode. Here's Stephen. Stephen, welcome to the show, my friend. It is absolutely great having you here because we haven't really spoken before, apart from like 10 tweets or something like that.
Yeah, a few tweets back and forth. So modern communication. I think we are the equivalent of best friends now. I think that's according to the Twitter world.
This is what we call now a long-term relationship.
That's right.
This is all this stuff is on Twitter, which is wonderful. Anyway, because I haven't spoken to you before and I know very little about you other than the project that you currently have in Game on Tabletop, we need to make sure that you know how to answer questions because you could be a politician and not answer anything. And then it will make my life very difficult. So let's make sure that you know you can answer questions. So okay. Let me ask you a few things. Firstly, I know you're British, but tea or coffee?
Depends on the time of the day.
I thought you weren't a politician.
No, I mean, I'm a very modern Brit. Technically, I'm a Scot, so I just want to be very clear about that. I'm okay, Scottish no, first, British second. You know, that's how it goes. You know, I fly two flags, one on the left, one on the right. You know, coffee in the morning, absolutely black coffee, nothing in it. That's how you know God intended it to be. Yeah. Coffee through the morning, the rest of the morning, and then I switch to tea. So both are fantastic, and my wife's American. She understands now, after having lived in the UK for 20 years, the sheer brilliance of a cup of tea, quite frankly. And in fact, when we go to the States to visit the in-laws, there's much puzzlement about where is their kettle and why aren't we being offered some tea when we turn up at the house.
And above all, please do not let them make the tea. I'm sorry, Americans, they make fantastic coffee, but tea makers, no, they lost that when they kicked you out. So no.
Absolutely. They threw it in the harbour with intent, and you know it stayed there, quite frankly. Yes. But absolutely, the best coffee is in the States. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm in Italy.
They really have a monopoly. They do. And the food is, I'm not a foodie. I barely appreciate food. I would, in fact, if you go back to the classic Star Trek days of having little cubes of, you know, sort of protein on a plate, that would suffice for me. I would just eat that and be fine. I know it's a crime, but that's how I feel about it. Except when I'm in Italy. It's when I'm in Italy, suddenly it's like, yes, I'll have everything on the menu twice, please.
Well, you still have to come to Spain. That's all I have to say. Sorry, my patriotic vein just came up here. I feel slightly hurt.
It was a long time ago since I've been to Spain, I must say.
Things have changed, I tell you. Okay. Uh-huh. Question number two.
Well, as we're besties now, according to Twitter, you know, I'll come over next year or something. You know.
Okay, yeah, as soon as the pandemic's over, I have a guest room, so I know you can see it behind me. So
it's a date. I like it.
Question number two, the beach or the mountain?
Mountain, absolutely. Okay.
Absolutely. See, that was an easier one.
It was a really easy one. You see, I'm Scottish, so the sun just shrivels me up and burns me to a crisp, bit like a vampire. Whereas on the mountains, nope, love the mountains, love the views.
Okay. Question number three, cars or motorbikes?
My soul longs for the bike that I don't have anymore. I am a biker in my heart. Had it for 10 years, absolutely loved it. Then children came along, responsibilities, luggage. You know, the reality is when you get older, you realize it's not about, you know, the romance or the you know, some other, you know, safety aspect. It's just practicality.
You know, I met somebody once who told me that the way he managed to keep his bike when they got a child is that he said, I get to the shops to get nappies a lot quicker on the bike than on the car.
Genius.
I thought it was a bit feeble, but it worked. So
something in it. I mean, I spent 19 years in the corporate world as an executive. Well, I was in executive recruitment, and for 15 years of that, I was a trainer. So there was an expectation that I would turn up at work in, you know, suits and, you know, looking really quite sharp. So once I had the children on one hand and then that career on the other, it meant that the bike really sadly just had no place. I kept it for a year without using it, and then realized that it was sort of selfish. So I've sold it to a chap who very much appreciated it and rides around on it to this day, I believe.
Oh, well, fair enough indeed. But you know what? As a trainer that I was myself, I bet you anything, if you had arrived to the classroom with your bike leathers, people would have paid a lot more attention than the suit. You know, there's nothing that says, look at me, than not wearing a suit. So, yeah. Okay.
It's a thought.
I like breaking molds. Question number four. This is a bit harder. Okay, they start getting a little bit harder from now on. Okay. Fantasy or science fiction?
Depends whether I'm reading or watching it. If I'm watching it, then it's science fiction. On the grounds, and I'm going to get a bit of hate mail here, but on the grounds that there are very, very few good fantasy films. For some reason, filmmakers seem to just forget how to do movies when they get to fantasy. You know, I like a good film that happens to be in the science fiction genre, but it wants to be a good film first. And I want the same thing when I watch a fantasy film. I don't get that experience most of the time. It's very, very rare.
You're not the first person to tell me that. So yeah, I can empathize with that. Okay, last but not least, zombies or vampires?
Oh, no, that's an interesting one. I would definitely say vampires, but zombies have a place in my heart, and I have loyally watched every episode of The Walking Dead and all of the spin-offs and variant, you know, versions, even though sometimes it's really, really bad. But there's something about that what if scenario, and I like that what if, especially in the shows, very often when it's okay, well, that was really stupid to do that. What would I have done in that situation?
Well, there's something to be said about the way that we look at things compared to the way that writers look at things. You know, a friend of mine has the ball of stupid decision, you know, which is when the characters make a decision that you look at them and think, that's a stupid thing to do. Mm-hmm. But if you look deeper into it, it would appear that they make the decision because they're either giving somebody a chance or they are having a leap of faith or they look for redemption. And that's why they make an obviously stupid decision to make sure that somebody else can redeem themselves. So there are an awful lot of things that can be said about that. But
I think that's true. And it, you do end up with some interesting morale. It's almost a morality play in some ways when it's at its best. So there's certainly aspects of it that I like. So I do love that sort of genre. But as an individual sort of creature or something I was going to use in a role-play game, for example, I'd much prefer the vampires because I think there's a lot of nuances and subtleties there.
Definitely, yes. Okay, so now that we have made the world clear that both you can answer questions and B, we can have a conversation because I bet that we could be talking about this for hours.
I think we probably could, yes. Never mind the magazine. Who cares?
Okay, let's talk a little bit about you because the reason you're here is because you're running currently a campaign on Game on Tabletop to release the Oracle magazine issue number 7.
Correct.
So this is something that's been going on for a while now, but I have to admit, I haven't really heard about it before. So to give me a little bit of your background, where do you come from and why are you doing this?
Okay. Well, there's two layers to it, or two streams, I suppose. If you go back to 1981, that was when I was first introduced to Dungeons & Dragons. That rapidly then moved into Tunnels & Trolls, to Traveller, RuneQuest, Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. I started off with the Expert version. Started off with Basic, actually, then went to Expert, then to Advanced. So role-playing has been in the background of my life for years, and I absolutely love it. It is my favourite game to play, if just bar none. I think there's such wonderful experiences that you can have. And what I love as an adult now playing the games is that the experiences you have with your players actually become as real as the real events that you have with your other friends. Mm-hmm. You know, so you get together with your gamer buddies and you still talk about that time that you went into the dungeon and you use your first person. You know, we went into the dungeon. Oh, do you remember that time that you leapt over that fire pit? No, we weren't leaping over fire pits. We were sitting on our butts, you know, around a table. But it seems like it's us. And I think that's, quite honestly, it's magical. And I absolutely love it. So that's been a part of my life for years and years and years. I then went the traditional, you know, I did go to art college. Mostly because I failed all my exams, so there was no other option. I was the cliched art student of, you know, academically a little bit challenged there. And so went to art college, then got various jobs and ended up in corporate recruitment at the top end, doing executive sort of headhunting, and morphed then became a trainer, and 15 years of doing that. Various things occurred to me. I was getting older. I was perhaps losing some interest in the world that I was operating in. And I still had this sort of creative urge from my art interest, from my role-playing games that had been maintained. Fourth edition came out in particular, for Dungeons & Dragons. That very much got me back into it. And you can just sort of see over one of my shoulders that I've got the entire collection of fourth edition books that I painstakingly bought over 3 years. So gathered all this material, reading all this stuff. D&D is on the rise. Fifth edition comes out. I purchase it, as everyone does. You know, I read it, I play a little bit. And then they opened up the DMs Guild, which was the option to be able to publish your own material for other players. And this was just a fantastic thing. It was a way of almost giving back, but also it was a way of exploring, could I have another career? Is there life after recruitment? excuse me. And for anyone watching this who's in the recruitment space, they will recognize that question, because it's often said. You know, there's a joke about you don't see any old recruiters. And I was, you know, getting into sort of middle age and thinking, that's a fair point. What do I want to do going forward? In 10 years, do I still want to be doing this? So I started to publish on the DMs Guild, publish on DriveThruRPG, very much small publications, collections of NPCs was my main sort of thing. So you get 25 elves or 20 dwarves or whatever it might be. That then built up. It was a bit of practice, started to refine the design of it. And I had the idea that actually what was really missing, I felt, in the RPG space, and what I was missing personally, was a regular publication that gave me a raft of new material. So, you know, what I tend to do is cobble together my adventures and my campaigns from lots of different literature. So I'll take one room from the Tomb of Horrors, and I'll put it in with something from one of the other, you know, I've gone blank now, but one of the other adventures. I'll take a little bit from an old Dragon magazine. I'll look at a copy of Ares. And then I produce a campaign that's sort of stitched together with all these little components that I then blend. And I think this is how most games masters put their material together. So I was wondering, is it possible to give them the components, the building blocks, if you will, on a monthly basis so that they can build their adventures? And it was from that the magazine was born.
But when was that? Because it's been 7 issues already, and I'm taking this as not a monthly publication.
It is a monthly publication, in fact.
It is?
Yes, it is. So I actually started... We'll come to that in a minute. So if you're looking at the sort of history of it, then so about 3 years ago I started to draft up some material and test to see whether I could actually put something together that kind of looked valid, and that rolled on for another couple of years, very much in the draft state. Then we had COVID, March 2021. It all got a bit hairy. And I had just moved out of recruitment, actually, back into the design space. I had got a job as a business development director with a design studio, which was perfectly awful timing, it turned out, because COVID hit, our client base was the hospitality and retail sector. So yes, that was a lovely job for a couple of months. I then was at this crossroads. What do I do? Do I go back to the smoking ruins of the recruitment world that, you know, wasn't doing anything either? Or what? Big question mark. And I thought, well, now is the time to do it. Now is the time to take the leap of faith and go this other route. I have the skills. I have the experience. I have the knowledge. I've been practicing it for years. I've got material drafted up. And at that point, I did have, and this was in, at that point, it was in April this year, so April 2020, I had a year's worth of issues in draft format. So roughly every issue you roughly get, there's 10 sections in the magazine, and you might get, you get, say, between 10 and 20 trinkets and treasures to find. You might get five magic items. You might get 20 NPCs, and so on through the different sections. And I have all of those in some sort of draft format. It might be one line. It might be a fully written up section. It varies. But I had a year's worth of material, and it was in very much, it was in a Word document. It wasn't pretty. It needs a lot of work to turn it from that to an actual magazine. But it gives me a base to start with. And that then leads us to your question of how do I get this done? Well, I've already started, I guess. I'm able to put together.
So that is, sorry to interrupt you there, but that is still a huge amount of material to be churning out on a constant basis. Mm-hmm. Is your intention to actually make the Oracle magazine something, an ongoing monthly
It is. My commitment to the subscribers and to the people who backed me on Game on Tabletop with this current issue 7, for example, that's a campaign that offers them issue 7 in both digital and printed for the very first time options, but also an annual subscription if they want, or a 6-month subscription, and they will get a magazine every single month. Now, in fact, I launched the first magazine on June 2nd this year. But I'd already launched an issue 0 prior to that, which was a special crowdfunding only issue. I've also published a charity issue in this time. So I've actually published 7, 8, 9 magazines in 6 months, each of which comes in around about 50 pages in length. That's fully illustrated, fully laid out.
That's actually very, very impressive, because I have been in love with the magazine format since ever. You know, it's the one thing that when I was growing up, I would consume voraciously, because I love the fleeting nature of the magazine. You know, that you sit down one afternoon and you read it and it's gone, and you jump onto the next, and there's always something new. But to publish a 50 pages magazine 20 years ago, that was a mammoth task. Mm-hmm. Now, it amazes me that you can do it one a month by yourself, pretty much.
It is by myself. I mean, I have some resources, in the sense of I have some people, luckily, who will sort of an idea is a brain trust, if you will. So I have a few folks who I will go to them. I go, okay, you know, next issues, for example, issue 7 is set in the tundra. So it's an icy wasteland, effectively. Think of the Arctic or the Antarctic. You have cities on the edge of ice floes, and you've got invisible polar bear creatures and crimbo trees, giving a nod to Christmas, which have exploding fruit. And I'll go to my sort of brain trust and say, okay, well, I've got this draft idea of, I've got an ice witch. That's the title I've written down. What the heck is that? What is an ice witch? Come on, give me some ideas. And they will bounce some ideas off that. And I'll go, oh, hang on, I've got something. How about this? And they'll go, no, that's terrible. Don't do that. What can I do instead? They are very, very useful. So when I say I do it all on my own, yes, I write everything and I ultimately lay everything out, and I find all the artwork and I put it together and I create some of the artwork as well. But I do it with this brain trust. And I also have a fabulous editor. Jane Spencer is absolutely invaluable, and was a very lucky find. Jane actually was a backer of one of my earlier campaigns, and happened to reach out to me and say, as some people do, you know, look, I might be able to help. And she said, I might be able to help. I'm a professional editor. And I thought, ooh, that sounds pretty good. Yeah. You know, that's a step up from Grammarly. So we got into a conversation, which isn't bad if it's all you've got. It's
better than I use it, so no complaints.
So, but, you know, we got into this conversation, turned out, yes, she's a professional editor, 20-odd years of experience, and a gamer, and an absolutely lovely person as well. So Jane is absolutely my right-hand woman, and I would not want to publish anything without her looking at it. In fact, I'm even nervous doing updates on Kickstarter or doing blogs without her having a look at them, which she doesn't look at that side of the business. But I just think, oh, God, there's going to be mistakes. I know there'll be mistakes, because whenever I send anything to Jane, I send her the magazine, she sends me it back, and it's so much better.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, editors, I have the utmost respect for them. I think they are such unsung heroes of the publishing world, because they can turn something rubbish into something actually palatable, which to me, that's magic.
It is quite incredible. And it's been a real learning experience as well. It's, you know, I joked earlier, failing my exams. Well, I did, mostly through sheer laziness and playing too much pool and poker in my last year instead of actually studying. So I like to think I'm reasonably smart, but I wasn't particularly well educated when it comes to sort of grammar and the English language from a structural perspective. Mm. So having Jane there sending me some notes about why she's made some changes or why she'd recommend changes has been absolutely invaluable. And this whole magazine business has been a real learning experience about working. Yes, you have to be very self-determined. You have to be very focused. And the magazine is only half of what I put out every month as well. It's worth just mentioning. So I've got a huge volume of content to produce. And I want to produce good content. It's not just about, oh, I've ticked the box. There's, you can have 10 NPCs. They're fine. I want them to be good. You know, I want them to have nuance and subtleties. The 20 that you get in the issue 7, there's interlinking characters. So you've got the granddaughter of someone, and then you meet the grandmother. There's the mother. There's a couple that are in a relationship. There's a couple that aren't in a relationship for a reason that one of them doesn't know about, but it's down, it's written there. So I want every issue has to, for me, stand on its own. It has to be a product that I would want to buy and read and think, oh, I can use that at the tabletop. So it's important to have that. And you do that through discipline, you do that through structure of your writing process, and you do it through having people who you can draw down upon for certain things, whether it's an idea or whether it's to bounce something off them, mm-hmm. or whether it's to have them practically give you some advice and help.
So let's go into that a little bit, because I can imagine, and to be honest, I would be thinking this myself, you know, I know how hard it is to write. And I know in my case, for me, it's very difficult to get some time for it, because I juggle my day job, I juggle my video production, I juggle my writing. And because the kind of thing I do is very similar to yours, except that I did Campo de Mitas, which is a whole campaign setting that is evolving. But creating characters, creating locations, is not an instant process, is it? There is an awful lot of thought going into it, and you're doing a huge amount of work. How do you structure it to make sure that you're not going to get burnt out in 6 months, a year time, and you're going to have to say, you know, I'm stopping for a bit because I can't take it anymore. How are you planning for that?
Well, I think the first and most fundamental point is that that's not right. People contract with me when they purchase a subscription, and I'm obliged to fulfill that. Mm-hmm. If I hate this in 8 months, I'm just going to have a horrible run of things until I finish the magazine off. It can't stop. I've started something that doesn't have an end point. Now, give it 20 years and I'm getting older and, you know, Either I'm handing it over to other writers, which would be the natural sort of progression, or I would very nicely say, okay, you can't renew your subscription because actually this is going to end on issue 3000 or whatever it might be. But in the meantime, that's just not an option. I do this for a living now. And that's the fantastic thing about it. I get to sit down, you know, come into my office, sit down at 8 o'clock in the morning. And if I want to, and it's not unusual for me to do so, I can work through till, okay, my wife isn't listening, so, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning, yeah, maybe. You know, it happens sometimes. Creative news, you just have to run with it.
That's right.
You know, so, and equally, I can have a day where I can have the afternoon off. I think I had that once. That's not very often. It's about discipline. It's about structure. It's about learning how you work well. So, for example, here's a wee notebook. I have found that if I'm So maybe I take somebody somewhere and I drop them off in the car and I'm waiting to pick them up. Well, here's a note that was cursed magic items for a particular publication. So I sit there and I write my notes. And I've now got, I developed, because of the time I spent in executive recruitment, interviewing thousands of people and doing that job, I'm very used to writing lots of notes that are then I can then expand into a fuller sort of piece of work. So I can write myself two lines that then is that NPC, is the core of the NPC. So that when I get to the laptop, I sit down and I start to type. And then when I finish in maybe 10 minutes, there's the new NPC.
Okay. So you're very quick writing, basically.
I am a quick writer, but I find I'm quick because I'm structured. I'm quick because I've built the bones of it. So, for example, when I'm going to write, if you said to me, right, please now write me the February issue. Actually, there's a good example. Here's a live example, in fact. The February issue is not going to be the one that I planned originally. So I don't have anything drafted for it. It is actually at word count zero. Mm-hmm. So let's decide right now there's going to be 16 NPCs in that magazine. So the magazine in February is about relationships. So I'm not doing it about it. Usually they're geographically based. So we've had swamp editions, we've had a necropolis edition, we had a city edition. This one's going to be slightly different. It's going to be about relationships. So I've got 16 NPCs. What I would do is I get my piece of paper down and I would write 1 to 16 down. In fact, it'd be 1 to 8, two lists because I have male and female. I also include trans characters, and they would be listed on the list of the sexuality that they were identifying with at that time. Mm-hmm. So if they were trans fluid, for example, but at that period in time that I'm writing them, they considered themselves a woman, they would be in the female list. So that's okay. How I address that. And I try and be inclusive for everybody. You know, that's my style. So I would then look at it and go, okay, well, I want to have 4 relationships in these lists. So let's have a teenager having a relationship with a very old person, because we're not necessarily talking about romantic relationships. So then that's granddaughter, grandparent. That's easy. That's boring. How about a street urchin and the king? Mm-hmm. And it's a secret relationship nobody else knows about, but he happened to see her in one of his royal processions, quietly got his aide to, you know, see what the situation was. And for some reason, he can't just lift her up from the streets. You know, there's something in the background there. But there you have street urchin and king relationship. Great. That's two things.
Yes. Well, the thing is, you could go very, very deep into it, like in-laws relationship, you know, what happens between the two couples of in-laws of a marriage? How do they mm-hmm. get along? What kind of relationship they have? You know, that sort of thing can add an insane amount of depth.
Absolutely. And it doesn't take very much. And from a writing perspective, that's very quick. We've already got two things on that list. So there's 16, we've done two, we're down to 14. Let's have a person and a dog. So this is a fantasy world. Let's give them a basilisk. Mm-hmm. There we go. Or a snake. Yeah. I've got a nice, let's do a snake because I have a nice picture of a woman, kind of a snake coiled around her. It's like she's summoning something. So it is a priestess of a snake cult, but they actually have this, maybe it's a snarky relationship. Maybe the snake is a little bit sarcastic, was summoned through and thinks not very much of her, but she loves the snake. There we go. We've got two different characters. So we're down to 12. And that's how I do it. I would just look at trying to create as much variety as possible on the lists. Mm-hmm. And then those are the bones. And then I'll sort of start at the top and go, okay, how are they going to look? You know, okay, so they're blonde, they're dark haired, they're a redhead, they're blonde. Oh no, there's too many blondes. Okay, let's change that round. You know, and I just try and mix it up. But I find that being quite structured and doing it almost in a work, you know, quite a rigid workflow makes it possible to produce quite a lot of content. The creative piece, and this doesn't sound terribly creative, I'm sure, to anybody listening, but the creative piece, I think, comes in. One could argue with the original ideas, you know, the woman who's a snake cultist and what have you. But I also think it's then at the building stage when I'm taking that one, two sentence line and then I'm writing them up at the laptop, that's when the creativity comes in. And if I have some skill, that's when that gets applied and they end up being quite an interesting character. You know, I try and avoid cliches or I deliberately overturn them. I recently created a, there's a, in another campaign I'm running at the moment on a, another crowdfunding site, I have a giant who is an art collector. Mm-hmm. So he's a mountain giant. He lives in his cave, and you think, you know, fee, fi, fo, fum, you know, he's going to go bashing you with, you know, sticks and things. Well, he's not. He's actually going to see if you have any art he can buy from you. Mm-hmm. But also that creates the opportunity then to possibly deal with him. The characters go down a dungeon. They find some art. What the heck are they going to do with that? Who are they going to sell that to? Well, actually, I've got this NPC who is an art collector. But he's a giant. Huh. Well, let's go see him. Maybe he'll want this. Mm. You know, it just creates a new a situation that perhaps they haven't had before.
That sounds actually quite interesting. Okay, so we've established that there is a method to...
Yes.
To your chaos, so to speak.
I'm going to argue that there's no chaos. There is a process. There is a definitive process. In fact, so much so. I mean, I have a little bit OCD, and that from a clinical perspective, it's in my head. So I've been very structured from the beginning. The very first thing I ever did for this was actually set out a file structure on my computer that was each stage of development for a file from idea to draft to pre-edit to edit to edited and so on, and I came up with an acronym, and you know, it's very, very structured, and I have a similar thing for the magazine.
Well, you know, that's something I spoke about in one of my videos recently, you know, in the publish your own game series that I produce, because an awful lot of people don't even think about it, you know, organizing files is just something they don't even think about it. So they find themselves in just one folder with all the illustrations, all the InDesign files, all the Word documents, all the spreadsheets, everything that they need. And I just look at that, you know, I come from a background of e-learning, and I just look at that and it's a bit, no. So the fact that you're doing that alone is pretty reassuring.
Okay. I think it was critical. And again, you know, we have similar backgrounds, as it turns out. And it was the only way to operate like this. And it was the only way to effectively produce this much material this quickly. You know, I can only work so many hours. And it's a nonsense to make myself have to work longer just because I'm disorganized. It doesn't make any kind of sense. One thing I do, for example, this is a tip for anyone who produces anything like this on a regular basis. Once I finish the magazine, it's been published, I go through it and I count up how many magic items, how many things to see, how many of each section were in that particular issue. I have a note, the Windows notebook thing, where you just get a little text file. I have a text file for each issue that says issue summary, and I list in it what everything has, how many pages it was, and how many NPCs and so on, because it's not infrequent that I need to use that to either marketing or I need to put it onto a website. And it's a nonsense to think, oh God, I have to count them all up again. You just do it. You do it once, it's done, it's in the folder, same format every time. It's the only file of its type in that folder. Click on it, get the information, job done.
That sounds sensible to me. Okay, one question in the case that I need to go into. You said that this is half of what you do, and you've mentioned that you have another crowdfunding project going on. And before we started this recording, you mentioned about your abracadabra book that you have just shipped.
Yes.
What else do you do?
I don't sleep very much. I mean, let me show, if I may show you abracadabra, so it's here. I'm going to put it in front of the mic here. So it's a 316-page guide to being a magical dungeon master. This is going to be very tricky to do. I'm going to have to turn here. So there's lots and lots of art. There's 450 pieces of art, I think, maybe 460. There are quotes from fantasy authors. There are resources. So this is sample story kernels. So if you think about stories and you're trying to come up with something for the next adventure, well, there's only so many core activities. Now here you have kidnap someone, steal something, meet someone, encounter something, and so on. So someone can look through this and go, oh, okay, that's a very quick thing. There's five questions to build any encounter. And the whole thing was built around the premise that good artwork means that good artwork in itself can inspire a whole adventure. You know, you see a picture and you think, yeah, absolutely, that's incredible. You know, here's this woman. You know, mm-hmm. it's an incredible piece of art by a French artist called David Ravoy, lovely man and a great artist. You could just take that and work with it, but you have to ask yourself the right questions. So the book is, it has the picture and it has some questions to prompt you. And there's various exercises and so on. So this took a couple of months to produce, alongside obviously the magazine and other bits and pieces, but that's the kind of thing that I'm on with, alongside mm-hmm. doing.
What kind of demon have you made a pact with to be able to do that in 2 months?
Needs must, what can I say? It helps that I love it. I mean, I love doing this. This is, you know, I had a recruitment call the other day. Someone rang me and said, look, hey, you know, we've heard that there's a training position going, you know, are you interested? I said, well, hang on a minute. I can't really talk to you right now because I'm in the middle of filing some pictures and I don't know if the fairy needs to go in the fairy folder or in the fey folder. And I've got this vampire that's riding a unicorn.
And the guy said, okay, yeah, you're not the right person. Bye.
Yeah, that's right. Fine. We don't have to talk anymore. Yeah.
Okay. Well, where would you want to see the Oracle going in the future? Because even though I know you're obviously very passionate and you can keep doing this for a length of time, but it sounds to me that this is the kind of project that could benefit from actually having more people involved and making it, you know, maybe bigger or more diverse in its content.
Yes.
What would you like to make it go?
Well, I agree completely. And in fact, we rebranded it last issue. The issue number 6, which was swamp themed, was the first issue under the name of The Oracle. The early issues had actually been called The Dungeon Master's Adventure Pack. And there was a number of reasons for that. But the more interesting, perhaps, is the reason we switched to The Oracle. We want this to be a broad, and it was designed and the content is written to appeal to anybody who plays any kind of fantasy RPG. Our content is all about the fluff. It's all about the story. We don't give any mechanical crunch because it gets in the way of that story. And honestly, if you're a dungeon master and I give you a good idea for a magic item, if I give you an ice acorn that can be thrown at someone and it transforms them into a pillar of ice, you can work out the mechanics of that for your game system. And in fact, if I then list a bunch of mechanics, it's only going to get in the way of the text. It's going to get in the way of the format. It's not helpful particularly. And if we do it for 5th edition, we really should do it for Pathfinder. We should really do it for RuneQuest. And we're still cutting out then lots and lots of other things. So it doesn't really work. So it's all about, system-free material. So as many folks as possible can have it. But one of the other changes that we made was we changed the format inside the magazine to make it look a little bit more attractive. We increased the art count slightly. But we've also made a call for contributions from the readers. So anyone who subscribes to the magazine is very welcome to send in their content. And this came about actually because of the work I did on Abracadabra. Because what I did there was I invited the early bird backers for that campaign to contribute one idea. So one thing they wanted to see in the magazine, in the book. And I had some fantastic contributions, some fantastic ideas. In fact, there's a piece of artwork. I can't remember the page it's on, so I won't flick through right now. But it was from a contributor. He sent that across and said, actually, could we put this in? And I said, absolutely. This is fantastic. And he had the background to that creature all written out as well. So I reworded it a little bit. And it's gone in there as a double page spread. And it made me think, of course, yeah, actually, I've got X ideas, but then there's X plus ideas out there. So let's bring in other folks. Mm-hmm. So I'd really like to see that side of the magazine take off and it become slightly more varied in content, I guess. Because of the way that I think, I am quite process driven. I am quite A to Z. And I think it would be nice to have a little bit more, as you say, variety.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why have you gone to crowdfunding to get it? In this case, you've gone to Game on Tabletop. And we'll talk about that experience in the next question. But why going on to crowdfunding? What do you need the money for?
To produce it and to live off, quite frankly. I mean, I'm doing this for a living. So when people are backing one of my campaigns, they are helping me pay my bills and keep the lights on. Okay. I don't have another revenue stream. I'm not doing this as a hobbyist anymore. I'm not doing this with another. You know, I don't go out, I don't work on this, you know, 8 till 1 and then go off and work in a pub or a restaurant or whatever. I literally will do my maybe 8 hour days, maybe 12, 14, 16 hour days, you know, but I'm doing it to produce the material on schedule for the folks. And we've never missed a month. Every month is, we've had an issue, including the months where we've had double issues, for various reasons. That's my commitment. And that's what's necessary. But I'm doing this and I'm crowdfunding it and Abracadabra and all the other publications, because this is how I make my money now. Okay. What I would really like, you asked about the future of the magazine, what I would really like is to have more subscribers. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Because if I get more subscribers, if I get 1,000 subscribers ultimately, I'd be in a position to do less of the Abracadabras. Because, mm-hmm. I produced this in 2 months alongside effectively 2 other magazines plus another adventure. So, you know, that was a lot of work. That was quite an intense period of time. And I'm happy to do that. But I recognize that at some point I'm going to have to slow down. That cannot be maintained.
Well, you're going to need a holiday. Seriously, you are going
to. I hadn't thought about that. But I'm coming to Spain, aren't I? So that's fine. Yes,
well,
I must remember.
But, I know. But even so, in the meantime, you are going to need some rest.
Yeah, okay. We'll table that one. So as I see it, all the other, you know, things like Abracadabra, et cetera, I love doing them, but they are extras to the magazine. The magazine is my core product, mm-hmm. Which is ironic because it doesn't actually make the most money yet, but it's still in my mind and in my business plan, the core product. So I would like to have more subscribers. So let's paint a scenario where I have 1,000 people that subscribe to this magazine, which is a reasonably modest number if you think of the number of RPGers in the world, and that this is applicable to anyone who plays any kind of fantasy. Absolutely, hands down, it just is. I would then be able to take a little bit more time on the side projects and do those over a long period of time because I wouldn't need to, quite frankly, hustle in the sense of, right, got to get one out this month, let's do another one next month, let's do another one for next month. And that would give me that extra time. I could perhaps go a little bit deeper or do things that are less commercially viable but are more for the gamers. So maybe produce a longer book that, well, maybe not more than 316 pages, but maybe write something that's a little bit more niche. It doesn't make an awful lot of money, but actually just scratches that itch for maybe 100 gamers or 200 gamers, and then I can move on to something else that's quite niche. You know, I do this and I'm loving my job more than I have ever loved my job in my life ever, you know, and that's a fantastic thing. But I still have to pay the piper, so there's a focus on the commerciality, and it'd be quite nice to be freer from that. And if I get to that sort of 1,000, looking at the numbers, that gives me that space where I can then slow down a little bit.
Yeah, well, let's hope that comes to happen. Okay, what's been your you're an experienced crowdfunder. Why did you decide to move on to Game on the Tabletop?
Well, Game on the Tabletop, there's two things I really like about it. One, the functionality and the level of options for how you can make your campaign look are fabulous. You know, there's pictures on everything. I mean, initially it was like, oh Lord, I have to produce 8 versions of my cover in 8 different formats, 8 different sizes. Good Lord, my head's exploding. But once you get over that sort of shock, you realize, wow, that means that 8 copies of this image is going to appear like everywhere. You know, it's very nice. So graphically, it's very nice. And we're doing this. Who wants to play an ugly game? I mean, who wants to read an ugly magazine? Nobody does. No. You know, I work really hard on making the magazine, both to let the text lay out and the pictures look really good. You know, I pay for professional artwork. I buy stock artwork. I have some very good resources there. I produce a few things myself. But I make it look nice. You can look at it. You just kind of flick through the pages if you don't read the text. You go, oh, look, there's a crocodile emerging from the water. That's pretty cool. Or there's a dragon. Or there's a, you know, whatever it might be. That's important. So it wants to look nice, and Game on Tabletop gave me that option. You can make it look, quite frankly, an awful lot nicer than it can on Kickstarter.
Yes,
which is where I've been doing my other campaigns. So that was very good. And the other thing was that there is an ecosystem in the sense of they're all gamers on Game on Tabletop. You're not going to have someone who's, you know, there to buy their new desk lamp casually coming across your, you know, RPG magazine, as they might do on Kickstarter. So they're welcome to buy it if they want, but it's not going to mean a lot to them. So in principle, it might be a smaller party, and let's face it, it's a smaller site, there's a smaller number of people visiting, but they are more specific, a group. So instead of going to a house party, I'm going to a gaming convention. Mm. And in principle, that means that actually my product is much more applicable to a lot more people in that particular pool. So that's why I'm doing it there.
And actually, you can fulfill your PDF straight from their platform. You know, you don't need to go anywhere else if you don't want to. You can just right away.
That's a fabulous option. The fact that people can actually get it. Now I've set it up so that will become available as soon as their campaign ends. Mm. People get that PDF, and of course for a magazine, that's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it just means you just get it there and then. And in fact, at the moment, if you back it, we won't even take your money until the end, but you get the PDF for issue 6, which is the Swamp issue. Mm-hmm. If you purchase that, you get that immediately. So,
which is brilliant. I think that is such a great hook for pretty much anyone. And also, the one thing I wanted to ask you is, how are you keeping the price of the magazine so affordable? Because it's very cheap.
It's good value. One wouldn't say cheap, but it's good value.
I mean, yes, okay, but you know what I mean. You don't have to pay an awful lot of money to get a 50 pages magazine, which is less than you would have to pay to get a 50 pages, you know, source book.
Yes, it's true. It's a lot for reasonably little. And in fact, I have a great consultant for crowdfunding, a chap called Al. And Al is continually chiding me about my pricing. I do it because I want it to be fair. I'm doing this magazine. Ultimately, my ideal reader is me at the age of 12, because I would have loved what I produce. And I wouldn't have been able to afford perhaps modern prices. You know, I grew up, we didn't have masses of money, and buying, it was a big deal if I was able to buy any of the RPG material. I often borrowed it from friends who had more money than I did. So I got my expert, I spent all of my pocket money over 3 months, saved up and bought the expert edition back in 1981. It was a big deal. I still have it. And I don't want someone to be in that situation. Now, possibly the world has moved on. Maybe I'm you know, sort of playing the wrong game for historical reasons. But I do imagine there are folks out there who haven't got an awful lot of money, who are looking at some of the things that are available in the RPG world and thinking, I just can't really afford that. You know, that's actually a bit, it's not sensible to purchase it. In fact, that's why on this particular one, for example, I've done it for the last 2 months on my other Kickstarters, there's a £1 option. Mm-hmm. So you can have a magazine for £1 if you want. If you're having a hard time right now, if 2020 has kicked your butt, financially speaking, then please have it. It's my Christmas gift to you. All I'm asking is £1, and you can have this. I think it's going to be 52 pages of RPG material with my blessing. You know, enjoy it and like it. I'll do the same thing in January, probably. I think my intention is to do that because, you know, it's not very far away. It's not like people's fortunes would have picked up massively. And also, this goes back to the fact that what I'd like is 1,000 subscribers. That's my goal. That's my, you know, baseline, if you will. It would be the baseline for a comfortable existence, in the sense of I can produce this without having to look over my shoulder and worry about, okay, how am I paying my bills?
That'd be very, very good. How far are you from the goal?
Significantly far.
Okay, too far.
Significantly,
definitely.
Far.
Let's change that.
We're not there yet. It's a progress. It's a progress. Hey, it's all about a quest, right? We're just starting out. We've just left the show.
Okay. To start wrapping up the interview, question is: if people want to get any of your publications, whether it is Abracadabra or whether it is, you know, the magazine, how can they get it? Aside from backing it now at Game on Tabletop, which people can do pretty much right away.
Mm-hmm. My home on the internet is thegrinningfrog. I've got my own website for a second. Thegrinningfrog.com. Okay. Now on there, there's lots of free material because I can't help myself. So you get, if you go into the blog section, there's NPCs, there's magic items, random encounters, whole range of different things. People can just have it. If it's on the website, you can have it. have fun. There's also a shop. Ironically, it's terribly underpopulated. I have lots and lots of publications that I haven't put on there yet. But there are some, so people are welcome. And for example, the back issues of the magazine, when it was known as the Dungeon Masters Adventure Pack, they are there, so people can sample that. That you can get issue 6, which is the nice looking one. You can get that there. So that's the best place to sort of find out, you know, what I'm doing. And, you know, I will attempt to update that, you know, as often as possible. It's very hard to, you know, produce all of this, produce the volume of material that I do, plus do all the marketing, plus, you know, maintain your own website, I found. Something has to give a little bit. So you know, my home is a little bit, you know, it's not quite fit for guests, but, you know, if you don't mind a little bit of chaos, it's there.
Okay, fair enough indeed. And apart from doing your magazine, what's next for you? What's coming, what's bubbling in your head?
Okay, well, what's even more than bubbling in my head is actually in draft form at the moment. So obviously there'll be further magazine issues. January is going to be set in the Shadowfell, so it's the Shadow Realm. You've got lots of man bats and disgraced knights and sort of undead, but they're not undead in the sense of, you know, skeletons and such, but maybe vampires that like to live in the Shadow Realm. But some lovely artwork for that. So that's the magazine issue in January. February, it's relationships, which is just a slightly different take on things. And then in March, I think we go to hell. I think it's the hellscape in March. Lots of demons. So for once, there's actually more artwork than I need. Often I'm struggling to find artwork for the theme, but funnily enough, people do a lot of demons. So that's sort of, so that's the next 3 months in 2021 for that. In terms of other publications that will be coming out, if it's all right to mention, the other rather well-known crowdsourcing site, crowdfunding site, the other one that's not Game On. So let me just say it. So on Kickstarter, there will be, I'm joining in their Make 100 campaign for January, campaign drive in January, and I'm releasing a book of magic items, which is my first hardback book of magic items. It will be a limited edition, 100 issues, signed with a book plate, and that's going to contain something like 50 to 75 magic items, but they're going to be extensive in the sense that there will be their history, there will be how to repair them if you encounter it and it's in a damaged state, and that will have a consequence on the powers that they get. It will have details of who's owned it. There'll be some random tables relating to possible locations for the item. So it's less items, but more detail. With the idea, and have some story hooks in there. So the idea that it's not just, okay, here's a grab bag of, I mean, I have 400 magic items drafted up. I could just publish that dead easy, but they're not terribly interesting. They're just, it's a sword with some power.
Runs on the things, yeah.
Whatever, you know, so let me give it some history and some depth. Then the DMs can decide, where does this fall in their campaign? Do they just find it in Treasure Hoard, or does it become a central piece of the adventure? So that's that book of, it's going to be limited to 100 backers. That's on Kickstarter in January. I'm producing, again, forgive me, again on Kickstarter. In February, they have campaigns focus. So I've got Fight Club Arena, planned, which will be a solo play, entirely self-contained little A5 booklet where you are in an arena fighting fantasy creatures from giant rats through to demons and everything in between, quite frankly. All black and white artwork, brand new custom sort of combat system that I've created. So I'm drafting that up. I'm going to finish it before Christmas. I'm going to play test it like crazy between Christmas and the end of January, and that will come out to there. And I have a couple of other ideas. And something I might put onto Game On Tabletop in January, so in February. But I need to think about it just a little bit more before I announce that.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'm very much looking forward to hearing those. That would be really fun. And definitely, you're going to keep us incredibly busy, which is very good.
I hope so. Well, there's lots of gaming going on, so you know the people need lots of material. And one of the things, just talking about Game On Tabletop, that I do actually like is the fact that there is the option to, if you run a campaign elsewhere, say whether it's in a good the Indigo one or whether it's Kickstarter, is that you can then run a follow-on campaign effectively on Game On Tabletop. And one of the things that I'm being asked to do, this lovely book, Abracadabra, has sold out completely and utterly. I'm actually talking to one backer, because if he buys his copy, I won't get my copy.
Okay. So a reprint is due.
A reprint is due. So that might well be coming to Game on Tabletop. And I think that would be, I think given the pictorial options on there, I think it would look a very nice looking yes. campaign. It was hugely, hugely successful on Kickstarter relative to my success. So I think that's very, very likely in the first quarter of 2021 to give folks an opportunity to pick up a copy.
That'd be pretty good, because I was going to ask you, where can I buy that? So it seems I'm going to have to wait. Thank you, that one yes, backer.
We both have to wait. Yes.
Because of one person.
Yes. Okay. How selfish that they actually want the product they paid for.
Come on. People. Anyway, humans. Okay, just to finish, I'm going to ask you three questions just to wind down and get us into okay. a thinking, kind of lateral thinking way of life. I have three questions for you. Question number one is, what's the best advice that no one has ever given you?
The best advice that no one has ever given you? Yeah. That's an interesting way to phrase it. I'm not sure that you wouldn't know the advice. Oh, okay, no. So this could be advice that you've self-learned. Okay. Well, oh, Lordy, this is a good question. And I'm going to have to think of something off the cuff here. Nothing stays the same. Nothing okay. stays the same. So you think that at the moment a company has the monopoly on something. Say you have the ambition to be a self-published author in the RPG space, and you look at the world and you think, oh my Lord, it's Wizards of the Coast or bust. There's no room at the inn at all. Yeah. No, it's not the case. It will change. Everything changes. Tastes change. What's at the top now will not be the top forever. It's just the natural cycle of life. So there's always room for you to go back and revisit that. If someone says no to you now, they might well say yes next time. Or maybe they'll say no five or six times. It's okay, because nothing stays the same. Maybe that person leaves, maybe that gatekeeper moves on, and you can then work with somebody else. Maybe you can't produce your own magazine right now. Maybe you're not. Maybe in your heart it burns to write an adventure and publish it, but you just think, I just can't because of X reason. That X will not stay forever.
I like that. So I like that. That's what I would say. I like that an awful lot. Okay, question number two. What is the best mistake that you would like to make again?
Having children. No.
No. Okay. That's a perfectly good one. Thank you for that.
They weren't accidents, but they're never quite planned as you think.
They didn't come when you expected them.
I think it was I discovered role play games by accident. I was introduced to them, but that person, the whole circumstance leading up to that introduction was an accident, and was accidental. And I think that was quite marvelous. So I'd love there to be another accident that introduced me to something else that I love in the same way. My wife is a history and ballet, and she took me to a ballet a couple of years ago. And wow, that's really quite an impressive experience. I'd very happily go back once this whole COVID thing is done with, quite happily go back. But I think that those accidents where you learn, for me, that was it. There's this, here's this game. It's an odd thing, isn't it? It's a weird thing. It's a role play game. What is this all about? Come on, try it. You never know. So yeah, that would be nice. What else is out there that I don't know about that would make me go, wow.
Fair enough indeed. Okay, last question. Imagine that you have a time machine and, as you do, you go back in time and you meet your 10-year-old self and you say to your 10-year-old self, do not do this. What is this?
I'm going to take the fifth on now. I tell you what I would do though. Okay, I'm not going to answer that question. I'll answer a different question. What I would be saying to him is, someone's going to introduce something to you next year and you're going to love it. And actually, all those folks who tell you, because I learned D&D in secret because I had to.
Mm-hmm. I know that so well.
Okay. So all those folks who are going to be negative about it, don't listen to them. This is going to be global.
Okay. That's a very good advice.
And it's, excuse me, and it's going to bring you some of the greatest friendships that you'll ever have and the greatest moments that you'll ever have. So embrace it. And
so don't pay attention to the naysayers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good. I like that enough a lot. Stephen, thank you so much for being with me today. This has been an absolute joy and a pleasure, and I can't wait to see your next campaign so I can actually have you back, hopefully, and talk more about whatever.
Absolutely. Excuse me. It's not COVID. Don't worry.
No. Oof, and thank God for that. Jesus. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Fabulous. Well, thank you very much for having me. And, you know, I hope if folks watch this, that they have a look at the campaign. And, you know, I'd love to have them on board as a magazine and as a contributor. It would be great to get some of the wonderful ideas that people have. If they can't, you know, go through that process of producing it for themselves, I'd love to help them with that. I will write it up. I will produce it. I'll put some artwork with it. And I'll happily include it in the magazine. And anybody who gets put into the magazine gets that issue for free.
That's a very good thing indeed. I'll talk to you soon.
Fabulous. Thank you very much.
My friends, this is what crowdfunding is all about. This is what I'm shouting at all the time. This is the kind of projects that are worth, very, very well worth supporting. We have all wanted to do something like this. I grew up with Dungeon and Dragon and GM's Magazine and White Dwarf. And I'd love to see that continuing. To see just one person so invested, so devoted in making this happen. That's beautiful. It's just such a beautiful thing to see. And I cannot think of many other hobbies where something like this can happen. You know, it's just lovely. So please give them your support. Back this project, subscribe to the magazine. Just say hi, retweet, share in your social media, raise awareness. But please, 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 whatever you can do to help, do it now, because this is what role-playing games projects are all about. And to see this succeeding is a beautiful thing. Thank you very much indeed for watching or listening. If you've listened to the podcast, by all means, do leave me your comments and leave a review in iTunes if you're so listening there, because it's truly appreciated. And until the next time, I doubt I will talk to you before Christmas. So have an absolutely wonderful 2020. And if I don't talk to you before the end of the year, I really hope that 2021 is going to be fantastic and that all the woes of 2020 are going to go away as soon as possible. Because I think we all need a break. But until the next time, thank you so much for being there. And I will talk to you very soon. Take care.